It's 8:10. Good morning. Joining me now in the studio with Utah State Parks, park naturalist Kathy Donnell. Good morning.
Good morning. So all the parks are open and busy, so make sure you have your reservations made for the last upcoming holiday. Campgrounds are open usually through September and into October, and that can oftentimes be a great time to camp because the weather is pretty mild and the leaves will be spectacular in color. So Wasatch has a busy month coming up with programs and activities. On August 5th, which is this coming Saturday, we have an evening program where you will learn about nocturnal animals at the amphitheater from 7 to 8 p.m. August 12th, we have a trail work day from 9 to 1. The Huber Grove is open from 10 to 12, and it is also Military Appreciation Day all day, which means military get in free for day use. All of our lawn games will be out for people to play, as well as free rentals on fishing poles and bikes and GPS units for geocaching. At 11:30, we'll have a barbecue / Dutch oven cooking, which will be free for military families. It'll be $5 for other people to eat. Honor guard at one ceremony at 1 p.m., followed by cake and ice cream. So bring your families to enjoy a day at Wasatch Mountain State Park on August 12th. It's going to be a busy day there. And then on August 19th, we have from 10 to 12, we have the Fish Along Celebration. We've had the tagged fish contest going on all summer, and it ends on August 18th at 5 p.m., but then we're going to open it back up to all fisher people on August 19th at 10 a.m. So all fishermen can come and fish for, we'll have prizes for the longest fish, the heaviest fish, smallest fish, first fish, and last fish. And Sportsman's Warehouse is sponsoring this day. So come enjoy the fun, and from 1 to 3 on that same day on August 19th, learn about the solar eclipse with hands-on activities and a chance to possibly win a telescope. And then also remember that the Hit and Giggle is coming up. Sign up for the Friends of Wasatch Hit and Giggle fundraiser at friendsofwasatch.org, and the Hit and Giggles on September 7th. And all the other parks are open. I just don't have detailed information about them because I've been gone for a week, but they're still open and campgrounds are full, and just make sure people get reservations in.
Okay, Kathy.
Thanks.
We'll see you next month. KPCW News Time now, 8:12. Time 8:16. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday to discuss the future of intercept parking lots. On the phone with details on that, as well as some of the other items discussed, is Summit County Council member Kim Carson. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the council spent some time looking at possible outlying parking lots everywhere from the Klein Dolly parcel to Ecker Hill to Richardson Flat. So what was the direction from council following that discussion?
Well, we really would like to get some additional information, get a better idea of what the design as far as the parking lot would look like, how it interacts with Kilby Road. And then Kilby Road would definitely need some improvements to be able to handle increased traffic flow. So we'd like to get a better idea of what those are like. And then this is kind of an unusual project for us in that it's not required to go through the Planning Commission. Because it's owned by UDOT and it's within their right-of-way, there's really no official process except for us to decide that we want to do it and fund it. However, we all feel very strongly that we should have some type of a, you know, community forum, whether we host an open house, hold a workshop, or hold a formal hearing, we haven't yet determined.
So it sounds like you were just focused specifically on the Ecker Hill area then.
Well, we were. There was a commission put together, a work group, to look at remote parking sites. And they worked, I believe, for close to a year putting together some options. They started with 14 possible sites. You know, finding flat land in close proximity that would make it an effective remote parking area that has easy access in a mountain community is not an easy thing. So they came up with three sites. One of the sites is the Klein Dolly. The other site is the Ecker Hill intercept that we were looking at primarily last night. And then there's another parcel in between the Richens building and the Visitor Center building in the Boyer Tech Park, which could be a potential site. However, right now would not be an approved use within that development agreement.
Okay, so it's on Boyer property?
Yes.
Yeah. And that, well, we've got a, like, I think a 45 space lot going in. We're talking about expanding that to how big then?
You know, we didn't have discussions on what that would, what that expansion would be. You're talking about if it were to be at the, in the Boyer area?
So,
or
was,
are you talking about Ecker?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the Boyer property.
Yeah, the Boyer, we didn't talk about any specifics regarding Boyer, what that might look like.
So was
that's
there,
the longer-term possibility.
All right. Was there consensus, though, that the council would go along with that zone change that would be required to allow parking there?
You know, right now we have a, we formed another Blue Ribbon working group or commission that's looking at the entire Kimball Junction area and looking at planning and how they could improve flow and what the different needs are in that area. And that could result in some potential recommendations to changes to the Boyer development agreement. I hope we'll have some recommendations from them this fall.
Right, because we haven't heard much from them since they were first formed.
No, we haven't.
And they meet pretty regularly, I think, right?
They are meeting regularly.
All right.
So we look forward to that report.
The electric bus seems to be well received. I mean, I still see lots of empty ones driving by. Have we changed our other bus routes now to tie in with that service?
You know, there's going to be a meeting of the Joint Transportation Advisory Board, I believe, in within the next couple of weeks. And I know there's been some concerns about, for instance, changes to the service of the Brown Line. And so they're going to be looking at some of those and making sure that they haven't cut critical services that allow people to utilize the Express. And as money and number of buses allow, they'll, you know, be able to expand services to drive people to the Express.
All right.
Service at the Transit Center.
And what are you hearing about the Kimball Junction circulator? Anything?
We've heard that there's been great use. I don't have it right in front of me. We did receive an update from Caroline just for the first weekend, and it had, I think, well over 150 rides, and that's without people really being aware of it. And the comments from riders were that they were just really excited to know that they had that option.
Okay. We'll be talking with Caroline on Monday, so we'll have she'll have some of those updated numbers for us. In terms of the e-bikes, any update there?
There's, I know for the week period, that first week, there was over 2,000 rides. So we see that that's really successful. At the meeting last night at Richens, we could see that bus that bike station right outside the window. And there were not any bikes in it. So that's a good sign that they're out being used, and we will be checking to make sure that they're being redistributed, you know, in a timely manner. And
okay. So when does the county look at more transit service to the Industrial Park and Highway 40 corridor? I mean, do we need to wait until Silver Creek Village starts to build out, or?
You know, that will be part of that overall discussion, and I'm sure JTAB will address those. I don't think at this point there's any real volume over there to warrant it, but as units come online over there, we'll definitely want to start looking at a dedicated route for that area.
All right. JTAB is the Joint Transit
Joint
Advisory?
Joint Transportation Advisory Board, and that's made up of representatives of, you know, staff from both Summit County and Park City and also council members.
All right. Council also approved an interlocal agreement with Park City about naming a representative from the Wasatch back to go on to the Central Wasatch Commission, formerly known as Mountain Accord. The agreement says that the city and county will take turns nominating a representative. So how does this work?
Well, you know, initially we thought, okay, we've got this representative, and for the past few months, you know, we had talked about Andy being that representative, but then after the Central Wasatch Commission was formally formed, we thought, okay, we need to put more structure around this on how we will select who the representatives are and create some kind of a process. So basically every 2 years we'll alternate back and forth between the county and the city. And then also for decision-making, we will form a task force made up of the city manager, the county manager, the chairs of both of those councils and or the mayor in the case of the city, and then one other representative from each. And they'll meet quarterly with or as needed with the representative that's been selected to discuss issues and help provide direction. So we have a good representation for the Wasatch Back.
You said you supported this. Councilmember Roger Armstrong said it eased his concerns about the Central Wasatch Commission. Does this representative have any voting power at Central Wasatch Commission?
You know, I think it's when they do not have a voting seat, but they will have representation. That would be a good question for Andy once he starts attending these meetings.
Okay. And I guess we should note that the council did approve Andy Bierman as that representative for now. And
yes, we just decided let's make, you know, Park City have the selection for the first year, and their nomination was Andy, so we approved that. And I think Andy will do an excellent job. He's been very involved in the process, of course, over the last 3 years. So I think he'll serve us well.
Yeah, interestingly, he was nominated by Roger, of course, who's running against him for mayor. But was Andy the only one who wanted to do this, or he just stepped
up? You know,
up?
You would have to ask the Park City Council that. Andy, I think, just came to mind naturally because of his past involvement. He had told us if there was any objection to him being that individual, you know, that he would, you know, step aside and that would be no problem for him. But, you know, that wasn't the case, though.
All right. Council was asked about the Climate Action Coalition. This is a national group that supports the goals of the Paris Accord. You can be a member or a supporter. County Council seemed interested in passing a resolution to become a member. So that means we're paying for it?
No, you don't pay. There's not a fee for entering. I think it's more a symbolic membership. There's a county climate coalition that's part of the overall Climate Action Coalition, and it's being spearheaded, I believe, by Santa Clara County, California. And there are several counties across the country that have joined as members. So we've got a website we're going to all go look at, and then Jana Young will be coming before council with a resolution in support of joining.
And what does that mean in terms of, I mean, if we're a
Again,
member, does it mean
we're showing our support in the case that the U.S. would withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord, that we're still committed to the goals of the accord?
I thought we did withdraw, or at least the president put.
Well, he stated it, but I don't know that it's been done as far as an actual action.
Oh, okay. I thought that happened, and it was just a matter of we couldn't, you know, we were there through the end of 2018 or something, but okay.
Well, I guess that until that actually happens, I mean, when it actually takes effect, I should have said, we are committed to the goals of the accord.
All right. You serve on the Summit County Health Board. Just wanted to ask you quickly about the added regulation on tobacco shops. Just felt like it was necessary?
Well, for one, we weren't in compliance with state code. There had been some recent changes to state code regarding tobacco shops. And then there were problems where there's the difference between a general retail store and then a tobacco specialty retailer. And there were a lot of true tobacco shops kind of trying to sneak in as a general retailer, and there's just not many restrictions to a general retailer and how they display and sell their tobacco products. And there's no restrictions as far as how close they can be to schools, residential neighborhoods and churches and things like that. So that was one of the big changes we wanted to make, is having a way to distinguish between a tobacco specialty retailer and a general retailer. So across the state, there's groups. American Heart Association's been very involved in the Utah Tobacco Free Alliance in helping the State Department of Health and also the individual county Department of Health units across the state looking at how we define that. So we were looking at shelf display and storage space, And we had initially talked about that having, if they were dedicated to 25% or more, then we would classify them as a tobacco specialty retailer. But we actually reduced that down to 20%. And Salt Lake City is going, or Salt Lake County is going that direction. So we believe that will become the standard in the state.
Okay. And then the new permitting on food trucks, I believe, basically opens the door for more food trucks in the Snyderville Basin. I know that Park City
I mean, the number was already increasing, and this is just how we manage it. I don't know that it'll actually drive the numbers up, but it may, because the process is a little easier. What happens is wherever their brick-and-mortar location is, so their home base, in that county, they get a primary food truck permit, and then when they go into other counties, they have to get a secondary permit. So they're still required to have a permit with the county, but they might not have to go through all of the exact same inspections that they do in the primary. And those are some of the more extensive inspections, like with the fire district and that type of thing. However, we will do regular site inspections. I think there's at least two required. And they will be on record as far as us having their information. And then if we find them in violation in any of the ordinance, then we report that back to wherever the primary is. And I suspect we'll have a few where we actually will issue primary permits, too, for those that are located, headquartered here in Summit County.
All right. So they must have a brick-and-mortar business in order to even participate in a food truck?
I believe so. I don't have the ordinance up right in front of me. But they need to have some type of a home base for their, because they don't have the storage capacity in the food trucks. Typically, they just put what they need for that day and take it from wherever their brick and mortar is. And they've got to have an address.
Even if it's just their home that they perhaps
right.
prep out of?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, they've got to have some permanent place to park the food truck. So whether storage is an issue for them or not.
All right. Kim, anything else you wanted to mention?
Yes, we started off our meeting with a dedication of a photo and a small biography of Robert Hilder's service in Summit County. And his widow, Jan, was there, and several of his past employees. So that was nice. Some of the comments were that he was bright, intelligent, compassionate, genuinely loved people, and a Renaissance man. So it was touching. It's, you know, we do miss him, but I want to mention that. And then also, this weekend kicks off the Summit County Fair, so I hope people will have a bus service from Summit, the Kimball Junction area. I'm not sure where all the stops are. I'm sure you can get that from Caroline on Monday. And we hope people will come up and enjoy the fair.
Okay, Kim, appreciate your time this morning.
Okay, thank you.
Summit County Council member. It's 8:32 now. Good morning. Well, in the studio with me now, Dana Williams, the third candidate that we've got running for Park City Mayor. We spoke earlier in the week with candidates Roger Armstrong and Andy Bierman. But good morning to you, Dana.
Good morning, Les.
So I've briefly introduced the other candidates just by saying what I know about them. So I'll talk about what I know about you. You can correct me or add. You moved to first to Summit County, I believe, then Park City back in the 70s. You were a farmer in Colville. You were a bartender in a family-owned bar on Main Street called Ryan's. You're a musician and songwriter. You play with the Motherlode Canyon Band. I think that was since like the 1990s. You've been a real estate agent, a barista. You served three terms as Park City Mayor from 2002 to 2013. And since then, you've worked as kind of a handyman. Anything else you want the listeners to know about you?
Sure. I think one of the things that was actually most important was during the era of the 90s, I helped form the Summit Land Conservancy and was an early member of Utah Open Lands, and also started an organization called the Citizens Allied for Responsible Growth, which at that time the development community referred to us as CAVE, the Citizens Against Virtually Everything. And that was a super interesting, as you remember, you were here, super interesting time in our evolution as a city, because citizens became very powerful during that decade of the 90s. And I think that's one of the, so we'll get to one of the reasons I'm running now, is that that time period changed the whole paradigm of both Park City and Summit County government. It showed the power of citizens, what they can do to affect growth and planning and zoning issues, and what happens when you actually do participate in government. And I'd actually submit that the big four issues that we have in terms of environmental concerns, affordable housing, growth and traffic issues, and economic issues have all become part of the lexicon of those two governments. So all of those things that we were working for, that we were so frustrated about because we weren't making any change, they did change both governments. So that the fundamental focus of both those governments is those four big issues. And so I'm very proud of that, and I think we get to move forward with those things as part of the lexicon of our community.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I pulled up a news story from October of 2009 that reads, Park City Mayor Dana Williams says if reelected to a third term, this will be his swan song. So how come you're sitting here now running for mayor?
You know, I was certainly ready to go when I left after my third term, and I needed to go do something else for a while. Both my children have moved back to Utah in that interim, started a new small business here. But I started, as I've been watching us move ahead, there were issues, and probably the first thing that kind of got the juices flowing again had to do with the trademark issue last year with Vail. And I started to realize that that I wasn't done trying to have a voice in how we evolve. And slowly but surely over time with the things that have gone on in the last year or so, made me want to come back. I truly missed it. I mean, one thing that people are like, oh, you must have been burned out, everything else. I loved public service, and I love the banter, and I love trying to make citizens feel like you have a place and you're involved and your voice matters. And my role as mayor was to make you feel like you're valued here.
Well, some people say you missed the paycheck and the benefits, and that's why you're coming back.
Yeah, I heard that, and that's absolutely inaccurate. I'm very proud of the fact that I had set up the committee to look at compensation for mayor and council before I left, knowing full well that the committee would not come in with the results till after I left. So, this wasn't for me. It was to try to spurn other people to participate. And I did find out in those 12 years how difficult it was at $20,000 a year to try to serve because the jobs have become so much more time-consuming.
Well, 8 years ago in the mayor's race, your competitor Brad Olch, who had also served as mayor for three terms, said he felt like he had left the city in pretty good shape when he decided not to run for re-election in 2001. But it was after what he had seen in your first 2 years of office that compelled him to run again. You gave him a really hard time, I remember, back then for thinking that he could make a comeback. But it really sounds like you're now playing Olch's playbook.
That is way too complex.
Are you running against the current administration?
I wouldn't say that, because the current administration is building on the levels, the foundation that we set down. And I think you remember, shortly after the Olympics, we reorganized the government here. And we changed how the management worked. We added the Department of Sustainability. That was kind of my baby. That was the whole goal, was to get this so that we're looking at everything that we have to do based on the concepts of sustainability. That has now evolved into a whole community's concept. And so I think there's a natural evolution here of the things that we put into place shortly after the Olympics, and I just would like to have a voice in the direction as we move forward.
Yeah. So are you the disruptor, though? Because what we're hearing is, we vote for Andy and Roger. We're basically kind of getting, business as usual. Are you going to do anything different, or do we just move forward? Because that seems like you're in agreement with how we're moving forward.
With some things. You know, the idea that we are, looking at being a zero carbon city, that we're having huge amounts of affordable housing coming, that we've added some amazing new open space, including Bonanza Flat. Those are all extensions, I think, of how the government shifted during the time that I was in office. So, no, I'm not there to challenge anybody. I am there to add another voice from someone that that history matters, institutional memory matters. And so I'm just trying to add another voice to that.
Yeah, and as you were kind of mentioning those issues, I kind of checked them off. But again, I mean, there's growth, treasure, water, traffic, chain stores. I mean, they really sound like a lot of the same issues that the council has been working on the last 4 years. So maybe explain why you're different.
Because to a certain extent, you know, it kind of gets to what is the role of the mayor? And, you know, you've asked each of us in terms of what does that look like to you. To me, aside from facilitating the conversation and everything else, what I learned very early on is you go to bed worrying about the people having the toughest time in your town. You try to champion maybe people that don't have as much of a voice. So I think during my tenure in office, there were groups like Arts Kids or Peace House or People's Health Center that we made sure that we tried to help those areas of town where people might not have a voice. We still have those issues, although they've shifted a bit. I think probably one of the number one issues is the 30% of our community that right now doesn't know what their disposition over the next several years is going to be in terms of the Latino community. I think there are things that while I'm proud of a lot of the things the council has done, I think we need a Latino advisory committee. I think we need to actually spend a little more time in terms of not the government telling them what to do, but saying, no, you need to help us figure out how we can best support 30% of the town that's nervous right now and scared. I think there are other things in terms of Vail. You know, what most people don't know is over the last year, since we had the issue with the with the trademark, I've met with them every 2 months. And Kristen Williams flies out here. We sit down, Bill Rock and the three of us, and we talk about how are you coming into our town? What are things that we can do that make us feel like you're coming to be part of us rather than taking us over? Because there is angst in the community over that. So we have a good working relationship. I'm not sitting here saying I'm a Vail hater by any means. But I do want to work with them on how you come into this community, be respectful of our history, and how we move ahead together.
When you say that you want to go to bat for those without a voice, and you're talking about more than just those who may not speak English, correct?
Correct.
Right. But I mean, when you think about what we have done for our Hispanic population, I mean, we've done a lot. I mean, we offer them free to low-cost daycare. They receive free lessons. They have free back-to-school programs. They have free, you know, we offer free English as opposed to us having to pay $100 to take,
well,
Spanish classes.
I actually think that's more of a socioeconomic issue. It's not just Latinos that need help.
Tell me how it is you would go to bat for these people, because we're doing, again, a lot for them, right, already.
Let's clarify how diverse the Latino population is, because we have a huge difference in terms of the J-1s that come here that are mostly middle class, more upper middle class, here for the season. And then there's the year-round population.
Well, but we're talking about year-round people, aren't we?
No, because there's still issues associated with the J-1s. You know, there is a program that the current administration is talking about, reviewing areas that have high concentrations of J-1s and deciding that if they think Americans can fill those jobs, they'll cancel some of the J-1 program. That would have a severe effect on us because there's several thousand that come each year. But in terms of who needs the help, my understanding is that with certain grant programs that we do, they're available to the Anglo community too, based on your socioeconomic level, not just the Latinos. What I'm talking about is something where we have activists from the Latino community, the chief of police, the sheriff, the Catholic Church, where they're meeting with the government to say, here's the areas we need help. So it's great that we have outreach on a local level, but we also need to be able to take this to the federal level. And I think it's incumbent upon us to be able to go to the federal government our congressional delegation, say, come see this. Come meet these folks and stuff. And one of the things I was really proud of, even though politically I had I'm very different than Orrin Hatch, I'm very different than Rob Bishop, there are lots of things that during my tenure we worked with them on that I'm proud of. You know, for example, the Air Force, when they wanted to come here, we ended up having Orrin Hatch and John Huntsman and Rob Bishop going to bat for us. It's not that we were friends, but we had a relationship that was based on mutual respect. I would love to bring Orrin Hatch and Rob Bishop here, have them meet some of the Latino kids that have been here since they were kids that are now having issues associated with their legality in terms of how they make a better life.
I want to ask one final question because we've got a lot more to talk about tomorrow. But you're wearing a Think hat. That's the Treasure Hill Neighborhood Impact Coalition, something like that. Shortly after you won your third term, you did go and try and negotiate with Treasure, but you failed. I mean, so are you aligned with Think? And
for 30 years, I've always supported activists. And I think Think has taken activism to a whole different level. The whole idea that they were able to go out, raise $75,000, hire a legal team. I mean, those are things that in the 90s we could have only dreamed of. And so the concept that they're showing up and fighting a project based on the code and the general plan and have attorneys actually doing it now, I'm super proud of them, regardless of outcome. And that's, I think, another point that is super important here is that it's not necessarily about whether you win or lose. It's whether you step up. And so the fact that they have, I'm thrilled with them.
So in this case, with Treasure, you don't have that chance again to negotiate. That has come and gone.
Right. And I'm not apologetic for that because we had an opportunity. We knew the developer was going to pull their application because they saw where Planning Commission was going. So they had already announced they're pulling the application before we went and talked to them. The concept and the theory going in, and it was Liza Simpson and I were the two liaisons to that group, was that if we can sit down and try to come up with a deal, are you willing to do it? And they were, yes, we will make a deal. So we met for a couple of years, and we weren't able to make a deal. And yes, did we lose our ability as an appeal board with the council on the decision, so we have to now create a three-person panel that will review it? Yes, but we tried to come up with something, it didn't work. But I'm not sure that it was a failure. I didn't look at it as that. It just didn't work.
Give you just 30 seconds to tell people why you think they should vote for Dana Williams.
Okay, thanks. I think in next year will be the 40th anniversary of my living in Park City. I am infinitely familiar with all of the various levels that make us function. And I think that there is something to say for respecting our past as we move forward. And that leadership isn't something that changes just because you haven't been in office. Just because the pieces of the chessboard have moved doesn't mean that you don't have the ability to lead. So I would appreciate everyone's support.
Okay, Dana, we'll talk to you again tomorrow. You'll be part of the candidate forum that we're running here between 10 a.m. and noon. Between 11 and noon, we'll be taking your phone calls. So hope we'll hear from you then.
Thanks. Les.
KPCW News Time now, 8:47. KPCW News Time now, 8:48. In the studio with me now with Special Events Update, I have Jenny Dearson. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's see. We've got, we'll start with the Deer Valley Concerts. Lots going on there.
Yeah, so Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this weekend, we have concerts up at Deer Valley. Friday is the 1812 Overture, and then Classical Mystery Tour Tribute to the Beatles is on Saturday. Sunday, the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus is playing for Big Stars Bright Nights concert series. Tickets are still available to those concerts. Please remember, if you're headed up to Deer Valley, we have a busy weekend ahead of us, and please make every effort to carpool. Please don't park on the streets. Cars should be parked in the parking lot, or ride your bike up to those concerts as well.
Okay, and then we've got a return of the Sundance Summer Film Series. This will be at City Park.
Yep, it's the last one of the series for the summer. The movie this weekend is Walking Out. Fun starts at 7:30 with Fun on the Lawn, and then the movie always starts at dusk. That's around 9 o'clock. To that one, too, it's a great event that you can walk or ride your bike to. And just remember, I think the weather is actually looking pretty nice for tomorrow night, so no need to worry about inclement weather for that event. And then also wanted to remind people, if you are at City Park on Saturday, It is the Summer in the City Volleyball Tournament, so just expect volleyball players out there for that event on Saturday.
All right, and then Silly Market taking a hiatus for a couple of weeks.
Yep, they are out at the Summit County Fair, so you can go visit them out there and have fun in your cowboy boots out there.
Okay, let's talk Arts Festival, 48th annual. It kicks off, well, we can see it already kind of ongoing here, but give us the details.
So the Arts Festival kicks off tomorrow evening, so it starts on Friday, August 4th, and it runs through the 6th on Sunday. Just wanted to remind everyone, parking is removed starting tomorrow morning at 2 a.m. That's on Main Street, Heber Avenue, Sweet Alley, and the Swede Surface lots. Also starting at noon tomorrow on Friday, paid parking will be $20 cash only in China Bridge. If you do have a pass, green dot, blue square pass, then you should park in the North Marsac lot or the Gateway lot. We do expect lots to fill before noon, likely tomorrow. So again, please, if you're in the area tomorrow, we'd love for you to come up, but please remember to carpool and take transit as early as you can in the morning. And then we do have additional parking available at Park City High School, Canyons Cabriolet Lot, and Deer Valley Lots 5 and 6. And from there, you can take transit to the event and to Main Street and around town.
Okay. With the Deer Valley Lot, though, you can only be there till 3 o'clock as they start to fill up for the concerts.
That is correct. So thank you for bringing that up. They do have concerts every night, and of course they want to be able to park their guests up there. All of our jurisdictions and all of our partners are such great partners to have, and so we really appreciate them. So again, Deer Valley is only until 3 for the concerts. But again, Canyons Cabriolet Lot, that's a really great one if you want to catch the Electric Express into town. If you haven't tried that out, it's a great opportunity to do that.
Okay, and you do have a bike valet that you're setting up?
Yep, so this year the Kimball Arts Center has a bike valet on 7th Street. The best way to access the bike valet so that you don't have to go through the festival is going to be from Park Avenue. So if you are riding your bike to the festival, then just come up Park Avenue and it'll be right there, kind of near Bonhoff Sports on the corner there.
All right. So you don't need a lock. They take care of them?
They do. They take them for you. And then also wanted to mention this year, the Arts Festival hours have slightly changed. Friday is free for locals, and it is the same from 5 to 9 o'clock. Saturday, the festival will be held from 9 until 8 p.m., and then, I'm sorry, that was 10 until 8 p.m. And then Sunday, the festival will be held from 10 until 6. So those hours have shifted 1 hour later as opposed to years past.
All right. Let's see. You're also still sending out text messages for those folks that sign up for it.
Yep. And so we'll actually start sending some things out today. Again, this is a text alert system. It's really for up-to-date traffic and transportation or emergency information. Just text PC events to 888-777, and you'll get the most up-to-date information. If you just want to try it out just for Arts Festival weekend, we do have a special text alert system, and that one is PC Art Fest at 888-777. So again, if you just want that over Arts Fest weekend, then you can subscribe there.
Okay, and people can always give you feedback, SEAC at parkcity.org.
Yep. So our Special Events Advisory Committee is always looking for feedback, suggestions, comments. And again, you can also send that to our special events at parkcity.org. That one just goes right to staff. But if you want it to go to all of SEAC and then also our council liaisons, SEAC at parkcity.org.
Okay. And then you'll be, SEAC will be meeting later this month. You're looking for committee members. Do you have applicants?
So we will actually appoint 3 new committee members this evening at City Council. And the next meeting is on the 16th. We will be debriefing a lot of events. So again, that feedback is very important, but you're also welcome to attend those meetings and give feedback as well.
Okay. Anything else, Jenny?
No, but thank you so much. If you are looking for information, please visit parkcity.org, and information for impacts for the Arts Festival is right there on the homepage.
Okay. Jenny Dearson, thanks.
Thank you.